Could only be tuned to WRUV FM Burlington 90.1 on your radio dial.
WRUV FM Burlington.
The radio voice of the University of Vermont, your better alternative.
You are listening to 90.1 WRUV FM Burlington. Thanks as always for listening.
Looking for a crunchy, salty, fresh snack? Look no further than a big old jar of pickles. Did you know that pickles offer many health benefits? From Cleveland Clinic, pickles are a great source of vitamins A and K, antioxidants, and even fiber, which many of us lack in our diets. However, the Cleveland Clinic also notes that pickles are not all created equally. Watch out for added extra sugar or sodium. If you want to add probiotics to support your gut, look for fermented pickles instead of traditional store-bought vinegar pickles. This message is brought to you from your pickle-obsessed DJs here at WRUV-FM Burlington.
I don't want a pickle. Just want to ride my motorcycle.
Perfect, yeah. So obviously it's recording now, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And just to confirm, you're Jeremy, you're the lead singer.
And Voices in Vain, yeah.
Got it, yeah. Just a heads up, I probably will be reaching back out to you just to, like, confirm some details and, like, spelling and everything.
Of course, no worries.
Yeah. All right. So I have just one other question before we really get started.
Sure.
Is there a photo or video of a band performing that I can use since for, like, Instagram and promotional stuff? And, like, I'm planning on doing a written version as well.
Yeah, so. Totally. Do you want that of us or of the headliners?
Of you guys.
Okay. Yeah, I can definitely get that to you.
All right, cool. Thank you so much.
Of course.
So the first question I want to ask is, like, how did Voices in Vain come to be? Like, how did you guys get started? How did you guys all meet? What inspired the band?
So we've been a band for a long time now. We all met, well, the three original members, myself, Scott, and Lucas, all met in college our freshman year at Linden State, which is now Vermont State University with a campus at Linden. We were all students in the music business program there. Lucas and I have been friends since the eighth grade. He was my first friend. I lived in Connecticut for a few years, and he was my first friend when I moved there. And, you know, we always had a dream of starting a band together, and we tried throughout high school, and nothing really ever came to true fruition. And so, you know, when I got accepted to Linden, I said, hey, dude, this is where I'm going. You want to, you know, check it out? And he did. And we became roommates for all 4 years, and we said, well, you know what, we're gonna start a band. And so freshman year, Voices in Vain started as kind of a dorm room project between Lucas and I, just to start writing. And then Scott, our drummer, Scott Mullen, he's a native Vermonter. He's been around here for forever. He used to play in a band called Ground Zero. And so at the time, they were still pretty active, especially over in the Burlington music scene and such. So it didn't really pan out that first year, but that band broke up towards the end of the year and sophomore year, the beginning of, Scott was like, hey, you guys still want to jam? And so started in Scott's basement, which would soon to be condemned not long later by the fire marshal. Our friend Patrick joined in and we started making music, and then 10, 11 years later, we've had a couple of member changes. So Scott Lucas and myself are all still in the band. Currently, we have our friend Ross is playing bass. He's been in the band since 2017. He was originally on guitar, but due to, you know, some work scheduling stuff and the amount that we want to tour, et cetera, he switched over to bass, and we welcomed our friend Dylan Lampro in. And Dylan's from Western Mass, and he's been in a bunch of bands over the years, most notably this band Cractor. They were a melodic hardcore band that just, you know, they were road dogs. They made it work, and they got some really cool notoriety towards the end there. And unfortunately, that band split up. And then he started a new band called Wish You Death, which is really cool stuff. And we just, you know, we've been playing with his old bands since we've started. So we've been friends with him for forever. And when the opportunity arose, he joined the band. And now I think we're the, you know, the strongest we've been in terms of musicianship as well as our live performance. So really, really excited about our current lineup. And we're for the first time writing and recording music as this lineup. We put out a single last year that was, you know, the start of that, but now we're really hammering down on that. And yeah, just really excited to see what comes of this iteration of the band.
Yeah, that's super cool. Like, I was watching some of your guys' music videos, and the production quality is just super cool. It's like, it's a lot higher than I expected, honestly. Like, it looked incredibly professional. So how did you guys, like, kind of get into doing that?
So, I mean, we definitely have some music videos that are probably private on our YouTube channel, you know, because when we started, we were broke college kids and hiring friends with cameras who had never really filmed like that or edited like that. So, you know, we've taken some of that stuff offline. That being said, you know, I think our first real professional one we did was Victim of the Void, which was many years ago. That was the first song off our debut full length. And that was kind of the standard we wanted moving forward. And so for the last couple we put out off the most recent record, The Only Love I Know, we put out a song called Control Erase and The Only Love I Know, both of which were filmed and edited by our friend Ian Urquhart, who's from Southern New Hampshire. And we actually met him, I want to say, in 2017. We opened up for the Devil Wears Prada at Higher Ground, and he like reached out to us and asked if he could get a photo pass. And so we've been buddies with him ever since. And he got more into doing music videos over the last few years. And so, you know, he said, "Hey, this is my style. This is what I do." You know, and we said, "Cool. We love your style. Let's run with it." And so we did a couple videos with him, and yeah, here we are.
Yeah. I really like the lighting in those videos. Like, it's very dynamic. So yeah.
Yeah, we took probably the most abrasive song off the record and then the most melodic and released those as singles to, you know, try to show the depth and the dynamics of the record.
Yeah.
You know, say, hey, here's as gross and scary as we get. And, you know, here's something that's a little more emotional and heartfelt and you know, written with the idea of there being some beauty and some melody involved. So,
I really like saw that when I was like listening to the music. I was like, oh, that's a really quick turnaround. So it was really interesting to see just like how dynamic you guys are able to be, like with the singing and like the guitarists and everything. So go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think from the start, you know, we're a metalcore band. You know, that's what we're labeled as. But I think from the start, as creators and artists, we wanted to show all of our influences. You know, we're five different people with a vast array of influences. And so, you know, we say, how do we make this record that sounds like us while also, you know, paying homage to the music that came before us? And so, yeah, that's always been the goal, is to be dynamic and to try to not fit into too many boundaries or anything.
Yeah. I noticed that in Cyclical Hell, there's like references to Ouroboros, and I was wondering if you also took some literary references, because it kind of seemed like you might have been referencing 1984 and Dante's Inferno a bit in that song.
Yeah, I mean, both are things that I've read and enjoy. I mean, I write the majority of the lyrics. You know, sometimes I'll ask for feedback and we'll change things around either internally or with our producer on that record. But yeah, definitely try to bringing those references. And we've also had the, I can actually show you. That's our, old logo. If you can kind of see it, which is, you know, an Ouroboros. And so we've kind of been utilizing that for a long time because I think the symbolism is relevant to what I'm trying to convey lyrically, especially on the last record. The last record was, you know, very much about self-destruction and not just internally, not just me, but us as a society, us as a country. So, you know, there's stuff that definitely leans a lot more politically and stuff that leans a lot towards myself and my own struggles with addiction and such. And so, but Cyclical Hell, that was very much an internal song of, you know, struggling and continuing to struggle and just going in circles, doing that, breaking that cycle. And so, yeah, I'm not very nice to myself on that song, but, again, it was dark times and,
yeah,
you know, that's my outlet. That's how I stay sane.
Yeah. I thought that was a song that really resonated with me personally. Like, I really like that one. I was wondering how your style of singing, like, kind of influences how people interact with the lyrics, because, like, I found it very helpful that you guys have the lyrics in the description of your videos.
Yeah. I think it's kind of comes down to two factions, if you will. You know, there's folks who have never really heard any sort of like screaming before, or, you know, they just personally don't care for it, which I totally understand. It's not pretty. It's not meant to be pretty. It's much more textural. It's much more emotional. And so, you know, there's that faction. People won't necessarily look up the lyrics, or, you know, they're all listed on our Bandcamp as well for the full record. And we have a lyric sheet on our physical copies as well. So some people really like to dive into that. I know I'm one of them. I've been looking at the inside covers of CDs since I was like 5 years old. So obviously that's huge for me. And then you have the second faction, which is more folks that are well versed with this, whether it's, they're just fans of the music or they're the vocalists themselves. So, you know, I try to really articulate my words, even though I'm screaming them. You know, if you listen to something that's more in like death metal, that world, I think the articulation gets lost with the brutality of the style of vocals, you know, because they're going for this very guttural, aggressive approach. And so you don't even understand what, like someone like myself who really, really listens and has gone that ear down for screamed lyrics, there's still so many bands out there where you can't hear anything. And so, or you can't really decipher it rather, without looking at said lyrics. And so I've always tried to enunciate and articulate to the best of my ability, so those words still pop through and aren't just texture, if that makes sense. But I appreciate you looking at the lyrics, because, you know, they're very heartfelt for me. And, it's a place where I can be vulnerable in a healthy way. And yeah, I appreciate you checking them out.
I always love like looking into lyrics and like kind of seeing the references and stuff. That's honestly one of my favorite parts about music. So I feel like your guys' music is like, it's very relevant. I definitely agree with what you were saying earlier about being very political. So that's super interesting to me. Yeah. But I was also wondering about the symbolism of the album cover of The Only Love I Know. I was like looking it up and it seems like it could be either be the martyrdom of Saint Sebastian or Apollo and Marcius. Is there any specific, what is that from essentially?
So I can't claim anything for those references. None of us can. We really wanted to put in a lot of work on the art for this record. And I think we did. And we reached out to this artist that I've been following for a long time. I guess it's actually a duo. They're based somewhere out of the EU. I want to say Spain. I'm blanking on the name of the artist right now, totally, of course, but I can see if I can find it for you. But basically, we reached out to these artists. They do a lot of collage stuff, a lot of really surreal, crazy, dark art. And we reached out and we said, hey, we'd like to commission you for our album art. And they got right back to us. They were really open and receptive. They said, here's the plan. And so I sent kind of, you know, a blurb, like I just told you about the record, said, you know, this is the thoughts, this is the vibe. And they sent some some drafts over, we gave some feedback, and ultimately came out to what our final record art is. And I like to see it as more of someone, you know, like the nudity to me appears vulnerable. And it's also just like, so it's like putting yourself out there. And at the same time, that feeling of like being trapped and bombarded with arrows. And in this sense, you know, that's each other. That's the news. That's all of the current events. That's all of these things. And I think the fact that he is, you know, tied to this tree shows, and I don't know if it's necessarily an unwillingness, but it's showing this kind of self-destructive thing, because it's like you could get away from that. You could escape. But instead you're there, you're tied. And so one of the things we did was also originally it was a full tree. We split it so the tree was like half dying on one side and half alive on the other. Mm-hmm. And I really like that, because it's, to me, that shows a sense of hope as well. So it's kind of all of those things. I cannot believe that I'm blanking on this name, because I was the one who brought the artist to the table. Let's see.
It's a really cool piece of art. I feel like I need to go back and like look at it again after you pointed out all these things about it.
Yeah, I mean, it exceeded our expectations big time. Let me see. So Welder Wings is the name of the account on mm-hmm. Instagram, and like their name and such. And yeah, if you go check, I mean, they use a lot of that artistry from like the times of enlightenment and such. Mm-hmm. So a lot of religious imagery and such, yeah. But also then they collage it with death and just beautiful things like butterflies, flowers. Mm-hmm. And yeah, they just have such a really cool, unique style of art. And so we commissioned that. Mm-hmm. That's an original piece. That's like, wow. We own that. which, you know, I was really, really, really excited about, because that's such a cool art style. And then another thing with our actual vinyl or LP, mm-hmm. We had the inserts done by three different artists.
Wow.
All doing their own interpretation of our album art. So I really enjoyed that too. So if you open that up, you can see, you know, these three different interpretations, three different, very, very different types of artists making mm-hmm. that. And so I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, that is really cool. So it kind of sounds like you really like seeing people's interpretations of your work and like kind of how it resonates with them, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think all of us who create stuff, I think there are obviously instances in which someone is trying to get a point across, but mm-hmm. I've always liked to get a point across while leaving at least lyrically some open end, you know, mm-hmm. room for interpretation. Yeah. And I do really enjoy hearing how it connects to people, because, you know, we it connects to us, obviously, and we've put so much time and effort mm-hmm. behind it. So when it actually resonates with another person, that's like the coolest thing ever, mm-hmm. you know, and yeah. Even if it didn't, we love what we do, and that's the whole point, right?
Yeah. I mean, evidently you guys have quite a fan base. Like I saw on your Instagram that you guys had been down in Florida for a bit to perform.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we've been touring up and down the East Coast pretty much since we started. Mm-hmm. We released our first EP in 2015 and started mm-hmm. doing DIY tours right from there when we were 19, 20 years old. Wow. And, you know, we've been able to kind of build up the East Coast well enough mm-hmm. that we can go down to Florida and back and be mm-hmm. successful, at least how we define success. In the early days, we kind of just said, we'll go anywhere, we'll play any show. And that was fun, and you know, you can do that when you're young like that, but naive. But you know, we learned so much, we made so many mistakes. You know, we've played as far west as Denver and Colorado Springs and wow. kind of everywhere in between. So you know, we've played many, many shows to nobody. So it's really in the last few years where it feels like when we go out on tour, like each room is packed. Yeah. You know, you'll have a bad night every now and then, obviously. Even huge bands have bad nights. that's just the reality of the game. But Yeah, you know, we've been fortunate to make a lot of friends on the East Coast over the years, and, you know, people bounce around bands, and so we'll play shows with different bands that with folks we've known for a long time, or same with some promoters. You know, there are still a handful of promoters that are still doing it and have been booking us since the start. Shout out to my buddy Stab down in Panama City. We played Panama City, Florida on our very first tour, and the show was awesome. And we played there last January and, like, basically sold out a huge, well, huge for us room, on a Monday night. And wow. So, you know, that's because we have friends like that who have supported us and, you know, have put in a word in their scenes, in their communities. Cause that's really, it's like the same thing I'm trying to do with, like, the Your Spirit Dies show. You know, they're not huge yet, but I think they're on their way. And they're a really cool band. And so it's like, you know, we're going to bring them up here. And we're going to put everything that we have behind it and that I have personally as a promoter and a talent buyer to try to, you know, give them a good show here and say, hey, you know, and that's the other thing is I think in all of my time here, I think, the metal and the hardcore scene is stronger than ever. So I'm just really trying to get as many bands up here as I can to show the rest of the world, hey, Vermont's cool, you know, come here, don't skip us, because I can't tell you how many times, especially the heavy bands, believe it or not, that I try to bring here, and you know, they'll go straight to Montreal from Albany or from New York or from Worcester, Boston, whatever, and yeah. It's tough for folks to justify stopping off here because they don't know it, or there's not quite the the legendary legacy such as 242, you know, that used to be a thing that people like people wanted to come from all over the country to play 242. And now we don't really have a space like that, at least for our scene. And so I've been working hard to try to make the Showcase Lounge a home for that. You know, it's obviously different in terms of logistics, but you know, I think we have a really cool community here and I'm just trying to bring cool bands to the cool community and let them cross pollinate, you know?
Yeah, so you're, like, really trying to, like, build up, like, the metal scene here in Burlington and just, like, Vermont in general, so...
Yeah, I would say, you know, and it's not just me. There's so many people that are doing really good things. I'm just trying to provide an all-ages space that's safe for anyone to come to and show, hey, we have the opportunity to really push real ticket sales, so these bigger bands that I'm constantly being asked to book... hopefully do come through again because we, you know, we get a top tier metal or hardcore show once or twice a year, maybe. As far as the underground and the DIY stuff goes, there's a lot of people involved and there's a great scene and they should be the ones really getting the credit. I'm just trying to help, you know, play my role in all of it. Northern Corridor Booking is a newer one made up of, my drummer, Scott Mullen. He's in it, as well as, some of the Fifth World folks, I don't know if you're familiar with them since they came from UVM or not, but.
Vaguely, yeah.
Yeah, so they're in other bands too, all of them playing different bands, but it's them and then this other band, Coped, it's a couple of guys from that, and so they've been doing a lot of DIY shows. They're just running the same issue that we've been running into for a few years now is no one will book those shows. Because of insurance liabilities. That's what happened at the Monkey House. The Monkey House was kind of the home for heavy music for a while. And the shows were always packed. It was always a good time. But insurances are now actually putting in clauses for event insurance that say, you know, we will not insure hardcore metal, anything with any sort of moshing or slam dancing, et cetera. And so, you know, they're gone. Arch-Rite used to be able to host. I'm hopeful that SIBA will be willing to work with the scene. Otherwise, you know, there's only so few places they can book stuff. So it's tough because we're kind of fighting a battle on a few different fronts of trying to make this not only successful and like alive, but, you know, I want the scene, the community to thrive. And it has been in its capacities, but, you know, again, capacities. So.
That's super interesting about the insurance. I didn't realize that, like, event insurance just wouldn't allow that. Like, would there be some way to prevent that? Like, maybe just change the band genre name? Or would that being fraud.
I'm sure that's probably fraud, but I'm sure there, I don't know the answer for this, but I'm sure there's probably loopholes or workarounds, but for most people locally who own a small business, it's not worth the risk, which makes total sense. So it's just tough because it would be really cool to have like an 100 cap room in town that was easy to work with. So, you know, and that's the thing with Higher Ground and the Showcase Lounge is as much as I would love to host every show that gets thrown my way, you know, we obviously have a large staff and a lot of overhead costs. So it's just not logistically feasible to do that with that room. So holding out hope we'll get something like that soon. You know, we've done shows. Our last show that we played locally through Northern Corridor Booking was at St. Anthony's Church down off of Pine Street and Flint Ave. And they have like a disconnected building with a gymnasium there. So we held a show there, and they're doing another show for a local kid named Jordan who was recently diagnosed with cancer. So they're doing a benefit show there on the 1st. But otherwise, it seems like that might be another room that's not particularly interested in continuing these shows. And it's unfortunate because a lot of, you know, I think metal and hardcore get a bad rap. Obviously the dancing and such can get violent. But it's truly like one of the most welcoming spaces and communities and full of kind people. It self polices itself. You know, like whenever I book a heavy show at Higher Ground, I got to remind security, hey, they're going to take care of themselves. If things get really bad, sure, step in. But like someone's going too hard in the mosh pit, someone's going to do something about it. Stuff like that. So it's just really unfortunate because, you know, Nazi punks F off, you know, coming all the way back to the 70s with Dead Kennedys. Like that's always been, I feel like, at the core of this community is it should be a welcoming and accepting place. There's more kids than ever. You know, for the longest time, I felt like we were the kids and there was no one behind us. And now that I'm 30 and, you know, pushing it, now you're seeing, you know, roves of local high school kids and college kids coming out to these shows. And, you know, I want to continue to help foster that and grow that because I, you know, I wouldn't be the person I am today without my local hardcore scene when I was in high school. And without this music. And so, you know, even if it's just one person that's new to these shows, I want them to feel safe and included and welcomed. And it's unfortunate that we don't have an actual home for that. Because I think just about everyone who plays the music locally would agree with me.
Yeah. I was going to ask like you mentioned the community mainly self-policing, like especially with UVM and all the in Champlain, like all the colleges and high schools around here. I didn't think that the community would be like, so I guess, well managed essentially with like a lot of people, this may be their first introduction to this kind of music and community.
I think once you're in it, you're in it. You know, there's still very much an old guard. You know, then there's like my generation and now there's a new generation. So fortunately a lot of, you know, like we don't grow out of this. It's not a phase mom, you know? And so we're fortunate to have people to look up to. You know, there was a lot of guys and gals locally that I looked up to when I was really getting into it. And, you know, I was fans of their bands, you know, watched them come and go. And some of them are fortunately still around, some not so much, but they're still involved, you know. They still come out to shows. Now some of them are parents and they're bringing their kids. So it's truly like such a, like, to me, it's truly a tight-knit thing. You know, there will be people that lean more hardcore and more punk and more metal, you know, and there is always going to be differences there in terms of the music and as well as the ethos. But in a place like Vermont where the state is smaller than most major cities, you know, I think any of these heavy alternative genres, we need to all stick together and be there and support them. Even like, if punk rock's not my favorite thing, doesn't mean I'm not going to go to a punk rock show to support my friends or to support a touring band. You know, and I think that's really important to focus on because it's not necessarily like that elsewhere in the bigger cities. You know, you're going to have a metal crowd. You're going to have a more of a hardcore punk crowd. Here it's kind of all encapsulating.
I've noticed that being like kind of the general vibe with like the different bands here, like even just within student bands, there's a lot of cross promotion and like kind of working together. So it's really cool to see how like Burlington and I guess Vermont in general has like such a supportive community for just music in general.
Yeah. I didn't even move up here for that originally. I came up here for college. And then, you know, once we started playing, I got much more heavily involved. And yeah, I mean, it's why I'm here. Big reason is because I love the community, especially the music and arts here. I mean, I like everything. That's why I'm in the role that I'm in at Higher Ground, just because I love music. And that's the end of the story for me. I have friends in indie bands, and I have friends that are country or folk singer songwriters and so on, jam bands, so on and so forth. But the thing we all have in common is we live here and we play music, and it's in my opinion too small to compete with one another, you know, create any sort of unnecessary drama or pettiness with one another, because it's too small. We all know each other, you know. And things like that divide and split us. And that's not, to me, at least, what music is about. Mm-hmm. And to me, music has always been, music and food are the things that nourish our souls, regardless of who we are, regardless of our backgrounds, our race, our gender, our sexuality, et cetera. If you don't like music or food, I don't trust you. That's the only thing I gotta say, because those things bring people together. You know, they're meant to bring people together. They're meant to be experienced communally. You're supposed to experience joy and otherness when you're experiencing these things. And yeah, I think fortunately where we are, we have that. I don't know everyone's story. I don't know everyone. I'm sure there's some divides and just some petty drama, but for the most part, I think the music and art community here is so strong that it's hard to imagine myself anywhere else.
Yeah. I mean, those are some of the oldest things that we've been doing as humans, like music, eating together, and storytelling. Like, and arguably storytelling is a very vital part of making music. So it's just so interesting to see how these art forms have like grown and changed in all the different subcultures that have come out of something that's so inherently human. So that's super interesting.
And that's, you know, he's talking about subcultures, and specifically, you know, I'm thinking subgenres. It's crazy to think the amount of subgenres that there are now, especially in heavy music. You can throw any sort of adjective before metal and it's probably a genre. And so, you know, I think that kind of ties back into that idea of dividing us. But at the same time, you know, there's a lot of bands and artists that don't fit certain molds, and you know, I get wanting to label yourself as different.
Yeah.
And so the subgenre thing makes sense. I worry about people getting too pedantic with it.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
I certainly used to myself, you know, it's something I've grown out of, but it'd be like, oh, it's not metalcore. That's post-progressive technical jazzcore. And it's like, what the fuck does that even mean? Sorry. I don't know.
No, you're fine.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm probably going to edit this later, so it does not matter. Right. Yeah.
Sounds good, thanks.
So, I definitely agree with your point about, like, getting too pedantic about, like, subgenres and everything. Like, I feel like online people are always arguing just, like, that's not, no, that's actually. But obviously in real life, you don't really. I mean, especially not here, you don't see that.
Yeah, I don't. Here, again, I think it's just things are too small that people are just excited to have what we have.
Yeah. It's interesting. I always kind of thought of Vermont as like a big state. I mean, I'm from Rhode Island, so tiny state, but I feel like there's so much interconnectedness here in Vermont that I didn't even expect to find.
Yeah. I mean, big land-wise compared to Rhode Island, but you know, you get out of Burlington and it's, you know, small town after small town and lots of forest. And that's also, that's the reason I came up here in the first place, is I fell in love with the beauty and the nature and the ruralness. I mean, I grew up in upstate New York, so I grew up with a lot of that. But that was like the first thing I remember going to Linden and being like, wow, this reminds me of home. This feels like home. And it's been my home ever since I was 18. So
that's amazing.
Yeah. I love it here. If that wasn't obvious.
Yeah. Yeah. So getting back more into higher ground, you guys will be performing on February 7th, correct?
Yep. Yep. So Voices is going to be direct support for that show, meaning we're right before Your Spirit Dies. Alongside that show is Pure Bliss. They're from Syracuse. They played up here a few times. They played our album release show in 2024. And I had them up supporting a show in the Showcase Lounge last summer. They're really cool. They're like a hardcore thrash metal crossover, just real big sounding. And then opening the show is Creed Bratton, which is a UVM band. So.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I'm excited to have them on the bill. They've been playing mostly like basement shows and I think like Radio Bean and such. So nice. I think this is their first proper big stage, quote unquote. They have all been like very involved in the local scene since they've, you know, started making music and being part of it all. So I'm just really excited to play with them. And, you know, they've probably got the UVM crowd on lock, which is cool because we certainly don't anymore.
We got
the millennial crowd on lock. So, I'm really looking forward to it. Like I said, it's, we're all on the smaller side of things, but I have a lot of faith for Your Spirit Dies as well as Pure Bliss in terms of, you know, one day being too big for that room. So the point I'm really trying to stress for folks is, you know, come to these shows before they don't want to come back and play a tiny room like this, or they're playing in the ballroom and tickets are expensive and et cetera, et cetera. All the bands are super cool. It's diverse enough, but it's definitely leaning more towards metal. I think it's going to be a really fun show.
Yeah, that's super exciting. And especially since we have the UVM band playing, like I'm sure there's going to be a massive student body population there.
I hope so. I think, you know, a lot of people don't necessarily appreciate or understand what this is all about until they see it and feel it live.
Yeah.
I mean, even like I've had my dad come to a show and other guys in the band's parents and friends of friends' parents. And they're like, I never understood it until I saw it. And it's like, it makes sense. You know, there's a certain visceral energy that happens in that live setting that feels cathartic. And I'm trying to find another word for it, but it's something that I don't think people can appreciate necessarily without experiencing it, because someone who doesn't experience that release, that energy that's happening, you know, they might listen to the music and just be like, well, that's way too freaky or abrasive for me. I don't like that. It's giving me anxiety. But for those of us who love this music, it's our release for our anxieties. Even just listening to it, like if I'm having a stressed day, I will throw on something real heavy. And I am in a great mood shortly thereafter. And the opposite happens for some people. I'll play that with friends in the car. And next thing you know, they're like, I hate this. You know, this is putting me in a bad headspace. And it's like, I get that. You know, a lot of the content is not positive. But again, it truly, to me, it comes down to the community and the live show that come with it. I think folks really should give it a chance. And back to my original point, or well, rather yours, student population. I want more young and impressionable folks at these shows every time, because they're going to be the torchbearers. You know, it was like me at my first show at 14 or 15. You know, it's seeing them being like, I want to do that. That feels right to me. So, you know, I always try to encourage younger folks. I don't necessarily talk a lot on stage, despite the amount that I'm talking now. But one of the things that I do always try to encourage when I see younger folks is pick up a guitar, learn some power chords and start a crappy band and go from there. And it'll be the best thing you ever do. So again, you know, I think youth has always been the lifeblood of this type of music, you know, going back to 242, that started as a teen center, but the punks took it over and and made it a safe space for alternative music. And that's why, you know, everything goes in trends, right? Like when we first started playing in Burlington, it was, the scene was dead because a lot of the older bands had all broken up. You know, a lot of them were starting families, et cetera. And there was no one filling in those shoes for a while. And it felt like us and maybe a couple others were like the only young bands in the scene. And then COVID happened. Well, right before COVID, folks, especially the younger folks, started really showing up. And everything got locked down, obviously. And then when things reopened, it was like it exploded. It's just all of a sudden there's 50 kids I've never seen before. Like, well, where the hell are they all coming from? And I think what probably happened, you know, is I discovered most of my music in the early days of the internet. You know, I had a MySpace profile and, you know, that's how I really got into this type of music, was through MySpace. And I think with COVID, everyone being trapped inside, especially younger folks dealing with the pressures of growing older, as well as, you know, all the hormones, et cetera, angry, you know, maybe upset, not knowing why they're not being able to socialize with their friends. It's things like that. I think a lot of them found this heavy music as an outlet. And so when we were able to regather and experience this thing together, I think that was, in my opinion, probably a pretty big catalyst as to why there's a whole new wave of Gen Z coming to shows and making music. I mean, I can't even keep track of all the bands that come out of UVM, just in the heavy world or heavier alternative world. And I know there's more than that. And, you know, that makes my job fun, obviously, because I just get to explore more and more, and I get excited about young people making music. I tend to find that that's, you know, where the most raw creativity comes from. And, you know, you can hear someone that's a group of sophomores at UVM making some really cool stuff, and you're like, these folks are going to do some really cool stuff, whether it's this band or individually in future projects. Like, I don't know. That just excites me. But yeah. I apologize. I tend to derail.
No. This is actually really helpful for me.
Okay, awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely agree with your point about like social media really opening up the world to new music types. Like during COVID, I definitely was one of the people who like started to experiment more with like who I am and like what kind of music I like. And I definitely agree with your point about like social media helping people find new music. Like, honestly, that's like where 95% of my music taste came from. So
Now it's also a double-edged sword too with social media, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, having seen it from our perspective for the last 10 years using Meta and Facebook and such, none of those platforms want, in my opinion, want creators to actually thrive without paying them. So it's like, you know, Voices has 2,000 something followers, right? on Instagram, and we'll post, and it's like, how many of those people are actually seeing it? And you can tell it's not all of them.
Yeah.
And so to reach your own base, the fact that you have to pay to reach the people that willingly followed you and like wanted to get updates is incredibly frustrating.
Yeah.
You know, and I see it from the talent buying perspective because we do paid ads for all of our shows, and like Meta just does not, it's not very cooperative. It's not very user friendly in my opinion. And so when you have a monopoly on social media and the only way for you to get your name out there is either be very fortunate and go viral or to pay them to reach your own base, you know, it's daunting. But that's again why I think specifically with our music, and our style of music, I think that comes way more down to going and playing shows in new places and interacting with other folks in the larger community, because that's half of those people that follow us are not from Vermont, you know?
Yeah.
It's from us for years and years playing to 5, 10, 15 people in a new city and hoping that one or two of them liked it enough to buy a t-shirt and give us a follow on Instagram or something, you know? And so it's been a slow burn for us, but you know, it also comes down to what you want out of all of this. You know, I would love to be on bigger tours and such. That would be super cool. But at the same time, you know, we've achieved so many lifelong dreams at the size that we are that it's like it's hard for me to say anything other than I'm grateful that people gave a crap.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely agree with your point about social media. Like, it is, I think it's great that you guys also have your own website. Like, that was the first thing that came up when I searched your guys' band name, which honestly, like, that's part of the uphill battle of social media is getting people to go to the webpage and actually, like, see your guys' work because it's a really well constructed webpage. Like, it's very cool to look at.
Thank you. Our guitarist, Lucas, he puts in so much work on all of that. He's always built our websites. He's been our kind of our merch guy for forever, whether it's his own art or other people's art. But we have several T-shirts and stickers, et cetera, that are all him. He's a phenomenal tattoo artist. He lives down in Connecticut now, but which, you know, makes things for us a little bit more tough with one guy in Western Mass and the other in Central Connecticut. But, you know, we still make it work because New England's small enough. Yeah. But yeah, Lucas has kind of been the backbone on that front for forever. So, you know, shout out Lucas.
Yeah. Yeah. Honestly, like, it's really impressive that you guys are still doing what you're doing, especially in this day and age. And I feel like kind of getting back to your point earlier about insurance, not wanting to pay for these shows, essentially, like the risk factor. I feel like that might also be like what's happening with social media too. It's like, people might really not like this and they might just close the app, stuff like that. So I wonder if it's like partially just suppression in a way. I don't know if that's the best word for it, but
I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, I wouldn't call it to the point of like shadow banning or anything like that. But I definitely think there's intentional suppression to incentivize artists and creators to give money to reach their own people. And yeah, that's unfortunate. Like, I think at this point, we primarily just use Instagram. We had a Twitter. We haven't posted on there in years.
Yeah.
I think one of our old band members might be the only one with the password to it. Facebook, you know, we'll share the posts or whatever to Facebook on Instagram, but like, we really only communicate via our Instagram. And even then, we've debated for a few years now about TikTok, because going back to me personally, the amount of artists that I book because of TikTok has obviously skyrocketed over the last few years. But, you know, I think with us, it's TikTok leans towards content creation, and we've never wanted to be content creators. We've just wanted to make our music and make our art the way we wanted to do it. And some people are like, there are definitely artists out there, that are really good at that stuff that, you know, and it's marketing. It's just good marketing, but you know, there's some people out there that do great content creation and are great artists and have been successful because of that. And I respect them. But again, I don't think any of us ever saw ourselves being a content creator, and we don't want to feel like inauthentic towards ourselves. And I feel like that would be a slippery slope towards making our band something that it's not.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, it's kind of like one of those things where it's like, well, would TikTok really help us? I mean, there's this band called Crowbar, a metal band from, they were bigger in the 90s. They had a song recently blow up on TikTok and have a huge resurgence and a whole new generation of fans. So it's like, that's pretty cool, but it's like, they weren't the ones creating that. It was like someone made a post with their song and like made a video with it, and that went viral. So, you know, we can hope that maybe a TikToker will like us one day, but like, until then, I don't want to be disingenuous with how we communicate our art. And I think that feels that way to us. So it's unfortunate because it's kind of like shooting yourself in the foot, right? You're like, we still have this uphill battle, but I'm just going to shoot myself in the foot because I don't like that foot. And now we're going up one legged. So I don't know if there's any validity to anything I'm saying, in terms of actual stats, but, yeah, that's kind of my take on the whole thing. 'Cause
Yeah.
Obviously, there's more tools at our disposal other than Instagram, but kind of in this day and age, looking around at all the major platforms, whether it's social media or streaming, it's just kind of like, to me, it just all feels bad. It's like, I don't want to be using, like, I'd prefer not that we weren't using Spotify as our, like, main source of music streaming, for example. And not just because they pay artists terribly, but because of the ICE ads and because of their the CEO's investments into warfare and military technology. Like, you know, there's so many. Yeah, not to get on a total rant, but anywhere I look, I guess, in all of those formats, I just see a lot of negativity, and I don't want to be a part of the world that they're perpetuating. And so it's tough being a band and, like, you know, wanting to be to a point where maybe the music and touring can be sustainable enough where it's not everything comes out of our individual pockets. But at the same time, it's like our options are limited as to getting as to how and where we get our music out. And that makes things tough, especially with today's day and age with politics and, you know, socioeconomics. It's like, it just doesn't feel like there's any truly righteous path that one can take.
There's this quote I always see going around about, like, how so you can't, like, you can't just avoid it completely these days. Like, there's too many monopolies that people seem to refuse to think are monopolies. But, you know, like, I definitely agree with what you're saying. Like, it's really hard to kind of, like, decide, like, okay, what is the opportunity cost of, like, doing this or not doing this, like, especially when most people aren't, like, downloading MP3s anymore. Like, streaming is the modern way, I guess.
Yeah. And even if you're, like, a vinyl collector, like, I have a stupid huge collection for some reason because I don't want a retirement plan, I guess. You know, like, so many of them come with a digital download card now, and I don't think I've done it once, and I've probably got dozens of digital download cards in my drawer over here, and not once have I, because I'll go to Spotify. I've got my own playlists and whatnot, but that's why I always try to buy something physical if I can for the music. I haven't bought a CD in a long time, but I do have an enormous CD collection from my younger days, and this day and age, especially, you know, before I was buying for Higher Ground, I was one of the managers over there. So it was just like any time a band came through that I was working that I had never heard of, if they were really good or even like, that's pretty good. And they had a record and I bought it.
Nice.
And so I have just like such a collection of records of bands that I don't necessarily have on rotation regularly, but and also as like when we put out our record on vinyl, that was like one of our dreams was to, you know. And we didn't do it with our first one. Our first one, I feel like, was pretty exploratory, and we were still kind of finding our way. I have a friend of ours from here who said, you know, the DNA was all there, but this was the first real Voices in Vain record, you know, 8 years later or whatever. And so, you know, we wanted to make it that much more, you know, we put so much more into it, like I was telling you about all the actual, like, visual art and such. Just the idea of having something in our hand and being like, we made this. It was such a cool feeling, and, like, it was so cool to get, like, the test pressing in, and, you know, I have a copy, my partner has a copy. It was just, like, really huge for us, but, you know, again, I think a lot of other bands, especially bands, like, that play the showcase lines that are still very much growing, someone buying that record is huge. I think in many cases, a lot of people want to sell their records over a t-shirt. I know I do. When we're on the road, like, we could have a really great t-shirt night, but not a single record sold. Or we sold 3 vinyl and a CD, but, like, we sold a thing of pins otherwise. You know, t-shirts are great, obviously, because, you know, that's mobile marketing. And, you know, it's really cool when seeing someone out in the wild repping your stuff. But at the same time, you know, we've put so much heart, mind, soul, blood, sweat, tears, and money into making the record. I'm sure any artist would feel that. Like, they want that to be the first thing that sells. They want their music to resonate so much that someone buys that record. And I'm really, really glad that vinyl has made such a huge comeback because CDs, like, as much as I loved opening them up and going through the mm-hmm. booklets when I was a kid, like, there's something so much more for me about having it, that full physical thing. It makes it feel like such much more of a tangible product than just audio, you know?
Yeah.
And that's the other thing too, is like, if you listen to like a record that was mastered properly, it's going to sound 10 times better than any streaming service any day.
Yeah.
You're going to hear the little intricacies that were layered in. You're going to hear every note. You know, and I do believe Spotify recently upped their quality in streams, but still it's not comparable. Like, I listened to a record recently by this band called The Sword, that I have a CD for that I've streamed a million times on Spotify. But then when I played their record for the first time, I was like, how have I never noticed any of these things? Like I said, little intricate guitar notes or just atmospheric stuff where it's just like, you don't get that in streaming. And so I think it's the most authentic way to truly enjoy someone else's creation.
Yeah. Yeah. So I definitely agree that there's been like a very big comeback for physical media in general. Like, I know people who collect cassettes and vinyls. I personally collect CDs, and I definitely agree with what you're saying about differences in streaming between physical, non-physical, even just between streaming services. Like, I've noticed massive differences between Spotify and Amazon Music.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, there's that dark side of that with, like, people overproducing and, like, companies just, like, creating more analog things to, like, try to jump onto the trend instead of, like, thrifting, and not to mention artists who release, like, five vinyls with like one color change or something.
Yeah. And I mean, I like some of that stuff. as long as the quality remains intact, and that's not always the case with the variants because of, sometimes they do it on, what's it called? I'm blanking on the name, but there's, you know, the real way to do it is to imprint it onto the wax, but then there's other ways that you can basically make like a burned CD onto the wax. And so they do that sometimes with the variants. And that will really screw up quality. And it's just like, okay, cool. I have this, you know, pink and blue splash tie-dye variant that was limited to 500. That's pretty cool, but it sounds like crap.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm guilty of that. I definitely have a couple records with different variants, and that's usually just me being like a kid in a candy store at a record shop being like, I don't have this one yet. And thinking the record in general. And then I come home and it's like, oh, I have that record. Oh, I have two copies of that record. Whoops. And so now I have, like, extra copies sitting in my cupboard over here.
Yeah.
You know, that are just that I don't even play because they're just a different variant. But it's, like, it's also cool to just look at. I don't know. I like that.
Yeah.
But, you know, we just did a standard black, like, matte black and, you know, wanted it just to sound good and focused more on the presentation of everything as opposed to the record itself. And, you know. Different strokes for different folks, but we also have CDs and tapes. So February 7th, if you like CDs.
Yeah. Good to know. All right. So I think we're almost out of time for the meeting. I just got like a warning thing. So
Gotcha. Yeah,
thank you so much for meeting with me and like talking with me for an hour. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. No, thank you. It's very rare that we get a chance to sit down and actually talk about any of this stuff. You know, every now and then, like, we'll play a festival or be on the road. Like, we did a podcast in Arkansas that apparently people – I've been told by, like, half a dozen people up here, oh, I saw you on TikTok. And I'm like, I don't even have a TikTok. But apparently that podcast reached people in Vermont.
Yeah.
And so I've had a bunch of random people being like, oh, scrolling, and there you were. So, you know, every now and then we get a chance to talk. It's rare that it's just me. So again, I apologize because I'm only sharing my perspectives and we're very much a unit and we are very much individuals, with different thoughts. I mean, we all have same, I think very much same, mindset and ethos when it comes to our music and our way of going about it, as well as just kind of a broader worldview. You know, so that makes everything much easier, but you know, obviously I always want to give any of those other guys a chance to share their their 2 cents if they can. Unfortunately, everyone's super busy right now.
Understandable. Yeah. It's crazy right now.
And I work from home on Mondays anyways, and it's a snow day. Nice. So I got everything done. I got up early. I got everything done for work and just make sure we weren't had any crazy time constraints or anything.
Yeah, thank you. I really appreciate it. And if the rest of the band ever wants to do another interview, I'd be happy to do it.
Cool. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Yeah, of course. Thank you so much for joining me. So
take care. February 7th.
February 7th. Yeah.